everyone. This is Rob from Steep Life Media, and we are back with another conversation with Taggart Van Etten. Last week, we caught up with Taggart ahead of his 100-mile world record attempt, which he tried over the weekend at 6 days in the Dome. Of course, he went out not only trying to break the world record, but to go sub 11 hours in the process. If you tuned into our live stream, you'll know that Taggart had some things come up during the race and unexpectedly had to drop out at around mile 61. So we wanted to catch up with Taggart after the attempt to hear all about it. And despite not getting the record this time, he's got some big goals planned for later in the year. So let's just jump right into it and talk with the man himself, Taggart Van Etten. Taggart, it's been a few days since the world record attempt. I just got to start with the basic and most obvious question, but I know everyone's dying to know. How are you feeling? I guess we're 4 days since the attempt in the Dome in Milwaukee. So how are those legs feeling?
The legs are feeling fine. Pretty back to normal. You know, when you don't go the full distance, you're able to recover quicker. I'd have to say the first three days after, I felt like a bag of crap. But then last night, I quit feeling sorry for myself and decided it was time to move on. So,
right. I mean, it's totally understandable. I mean, to put everything, so much of your training since January 2nd into that, something that is incredibly hard to do, and to not have it go your way, I can imagine that's got to be ridiculously tough. But I can guess it's only made you stronger and lit the fire even brighter.
Oh yeah. I don't think I've ever DNF'd in any sort of track meet, triathlon, road race in my life. I can't remember never not finishing a race. And the fact that it happened on the day when, you know, you guys were broadcasting the event, people from around the world were watching. It just, it's more than lit the fire. I will tell you that. I am very hungry to get back out there soon.
That's awesome. I think that's what we love to hear. So let's actually kind of break down the race, like leading up to it and all the major moments around the track. Because of course, you know, you dropped at six, I believe it was 61.44 miles as the My Race Result tracker had at 6 days in the Dome. But tell us about the experience getting there and really just lay out the way your day went for us.
I had a pretty normal race morning, nothing unusual there. The only thing unusual was the race started at 9 o'clock in the morning, which is pretty late for most, but that didn't bother me. I had a extra bigger size breakfast than normal just because I knew I'd be waiting a little longer. We get to the race and finally, you know, with about 30 minutes to go, I start, probably like 20 minutes. I start taking off my sweats, making sure everything's good to go. And we head over for the pre-race meeting, down in my shorts and my singlet. We get that going. And next thing you know, they give you one more chance for the bathroom and then take off. So we get it going in the race and I felt amazing. I felt just as good as I did as I started any other 100 miler race or any other, a race, back in my triathlon days. As the race went, I was feeling confident. I was feeling great. And it was around the 8 or 9 mile mark. I looked over at my buddies and they asked me what I was doing. And I said, "What do you mean what I'm doing? Like I'm here running." And it's hard to talk in between the laps. So I'm just like, "Well, what's going on?" So then I get back around and they say I'm only running like a 6:42 minute per mile pace. And I think, well, what the heck? There's absolutely no way I'm running a 6:42 pace. I guess before I get into this little rant I'm about to do, I completely understand. And most major marathons, you end up at 26.6. Not every 10K you run will be right at 6.22 miles on the dot. I fully get that sometimes, you know, your GPS can show your GPS watch can show something that isn't measured correctly. But that's kind of my rant before I get into this. Well, that is the start before I get into this little bit of a rant, my soapbox. And so come to find out, well, all this year I've been basing my training from my Stride pod, and that's what I live and I die for. It's what I've used for all my long run workouts, is basing the data off the distance and the pace that Stride pod collects. And I fully believe the Stride pod is 100% accurate. It accounts your steps for your distance. And on Saturday, I had to do extra distance than what I had originally thought. I was passing more frequently and passing a lot more people than what I had originally planned. When you cross a mat in a race, a timing mat, it assumes you take the absolute shortest distance around, and it doesn't account for the extra steps. You know, every time I went around someone, I had to accelerate a little bit, get out in lane two, sometimes stay out in lane two for a turn, and all those extra meters added up. And I'm 99% confident I was running right on pace. It's just, I was adding a lot of extra distance onto that pace, and, the timing mat, you know, didn't reflect the, like I said, the 10 meters here, 8 meters there. Just whatever it was that I was putting in the effort for. So it was around that mark. They told me to finally look at the little TV they had with our splits. And we figured out this was a mistake on my part, my team's part, that I needed to be running between one. It was like either 148 or 149 per lap. But I had to increase pace because I was below world record pace, but I was way above sub 11 pace. And when you're an hour into an 11 hour effort, you know, you don't want to be feeling stressed at all. You just want to be still feeling like you're warming up. So for the next, I don't know, probably 2 hours, I really grinded hard, the pace down. I burned a few matches, but I was prepared to do that just because I knew I had to get back on track. And according, you can take this with a grain of salt. Anyone can. This is probably the most quote triathlete thing to say, but according to my Stride pod, from in that time that I really started chipping my time down, I ran a 2:39 marathon to get back on pace. Even though that wasn't what the lap split had me, you know, but that's what my data had. That's what I based all my training had. And then by the time I had gotten to 50 miles, my Stride said I had ran almost 53.5 miles. You know, like I said a few minutes ago, you can take that how you want it. It's just something I believe in. And then, you know, when I'm running potentially at I basically came through 50 miles, according to my data again, at a 6:12 average. The dehydration is going to come quicker because I'm on pace to run a fast 100K, not a fast 100 mile. I'm using more fuel than what I would for a 100 miler. And my body just started, you know, feeling at mile 50 or like between 50 and 55, like it would around like 90, you know, when you try to piece those last 10 miles together. And I knew something wasn't right. It was just very tough for me to do that. Yeah, you can probably, you can ask me something from that, 'cause that's a lot of information right there.
No, that's perfect. I'm gonna unpack that a little bit for those,
okay,
for our listeners that and viewers that did not see the record attempt go down. Kind of just explain a little backstory to what you were saying. So, of course, the stage that you chose to attempt to set the record at is that 6 days in the dome inside the Pettit National Ice Center in Milwaukee. So it's a oversized track, 443.45 meters, right? So the thing is, it's a three-lane track. So, you know, you're saying a lot. So a lot of the runners from like the 48-hour distance and the 24-hour race that you were a part of are taking up the first lane. So when you're coming around them, every time you step into lane two, and like you said, have to stay in lane two for an entire turn, that's going to continue to add up. And that's where that extra, your target goal was no slower than 6:36 per mile. That's what you needed to run sub 11. 6:45 per mile is what you would need to break the world record, which was 11:14, which still is 11:14:56. So you were kind of in right in between the middle at 6:42 for those first, when it was about first like 7 or 8 miles, you said, when your mm-hmm. crew realized you were running 6:42s. So all those extra steps of bobbing around people and staying on lane two for a lot of the curves is what ultimately then adds that 6 seconds or so per mile. And yeah, so that completely makes a lot of sense. I mean, the fact that you said you ran a 2:39 marathon to inside of there to try to get back on track.
Yes. According to my dad, I ran a 2:39 marathon. Then I think my 50K was like 3:09 or something like that. I had a 50K split of that in there. I mean, the speed was there for me. I guess, you know, some people are going to say, well, Zach was able to run 11:19 inside there. One thing that I have to point out is Zach has more experience than I do in these things. My first ultra was at Tunnel Hill, where there were 50 people on a 100-mile race course. You start in sets of 10. And then on the treadmill, you know, I just had to worry about one leg. So this was like my first real ultra when there, you know, it was a packed course. You know, it wasn't yeah. just me and whoever. That's where I think the lack of experience maybe came in, to where, you know, someone who's done the 24-hour, the 12-hour, the 100-mile on the track, who, you know, who has done it a lot, knows how to get back in the lane quicker or something like that. Just something that I had to learn the tough way on Saturday.
Absolutely. Because we were watching from the studio, the fact that it was a 443 and change meter track, and it wasn't your standard 400 meter track that you would see at the majority of like outdoor events, made it hard to do like the quick math. So we were punching everything into pace calculators, because we would see the race tracker would break down your overall lap time. So you'd be like, okay, you were running like high 150s, and then all of a sudden you're down in like low to mid 140s. And so we're crunching the math on that, and we realized that you went from running just off pace. So we're like, okay, maybe you're settling into the pace. At one point, it was like, for a while, you were running like 6:14, 6:15 pace, I think it was. So that, to have to do that with everything going on, like you said, like, so the, again, for our listeners, like, the way the event is set up is like your crew is at a table around this 443 meter track. So when you pass them, you don't have unless you stop and potentially waste, obviously you'll be losing time there, you don't have enough time to like chat with them. So you're trying to pick up this intel while you're moving at still a ridiculously fast pace. So I guess when did the wheels like really fall off? Cause like we did see you take quite the spill just past the crew table, I think in the high 50 miles. Was that a cramping issue? Was it a combination of, like, it looked like you kind of dragged your foot on the track and then you kind of stumbled and fell? Like, was that was that because of the nutrition situation you brought up? Because you make another excellent point, is that your body and your fueling plan was based off of your engine running at a specific pace. And when the pace has to pick up to make up for a deficit, that plan is no longer in alignment with what you have to do. So that's when cramping and everything can start happening. So what happened there?
So I got to the official 50 mile split on the timer. And I remember I came up on Jacob Moss and Nick Curry, and I said, I'm halfway. I said, I'm not having the day I want to have, but all I have to do is maintain this and I still can get under 11. I said, I even have, you know, a few minutes, even if I slow down, I was still confident that I'd be able to get my mind straight at 50, you know, to get back on 11. Then in an ultra or any endurance event, from ultra marathon to cycling, triathlon, when your body is dehydrated and just like what you said, I was fueling for a specific pace for a specific distance, but because of the circumstances, I was burning extra fuel. So I should have been taking in, instead of 75 grams of carbohydrate an hour, instead of 3 ounces of water per sip every mile, it probably should have been, you know, it should have been more. During that time, afterwards, we found out that my body wasn't sweating at all. That's what the doctor said who came over. My skin was very dry. I was experiencing some cramps in my legs, but that's nothing I couldn't work through. As far as like when I fell, it was two things. Steve Durbin, the race director, warned us that the track, it has a lot of grip, and some people are known to kind of just not really trip and fall like I did, but kind of lose their balance on the track when they stop and kind of keep going. So I think it was kind of the track, and then, you know, me being in a depleted state, along with trying to do my best to get back on pace. So it was probably a combination of those two things. There were a couple times where I went around guys and they caught themselves on like the inside of the track because I scared them and they tripped up. And with it being kind of like a hard rubber grippy track, it's easy to kind of catch your toe on it.
Right. Yeah, that's what it looked like happened. And then we were like, oh no. And then the camera, you kind of went out of our camera frame, and then you went and you hit it. You were like throwing 630, what I believe was like around 630, 633 pace for at least a handful more of laps before you stopped with your crew again. So after that fall, like, did you kind of just shake it off? And you were like, I believe you looked at the camera and said, like, this will not be the end of me. Like, your mental determination was just like pretty much unscathed at that point. You just kept trucking along.
Yeah, I didn't know I was looking at a camera, but yeah, I said this will not be the end of me. This is not how I'm going to die today. I was not going to let a fall, along with some dehydration, and my race that I had been training this whole time for. As you know, just like I've said in the past, I don't let any negative thoughts own real estate in my mind. It's only positive thoughts, even when I'm having my absolute worst day. I try to think about the positive side and try to stay as sharp and as concentrated and focused as possible. You guys might have saw, but the doctor gave me some ginger ale and a ginger ale pill it was one part. Then thankfully, Connor Holt, Camille Heron's husband, like texted Steve Durbin and was like, hey, when Camille's bonking in a race, I give her X, Y, and Z. So he gave me a plate of food to eat that I was trying to eat to keep going. And I was drinking Coca-Cola for the first time ever in an endurance event. What else did we do? Oh, well, towards right before I finally pulled the plug, those last few laps, they were just like shoving peanut butter cups and peanut butter down my throat. I came like into the aid station and my friend Jared had the peanut butter and he was like, you need to take this. I said, no, I said, I don't want it. I said, I don't want to eat it. And then he just shoves it in my face and forces it down me, being the great friend he is. And I'm just so frustrated that he did that. And then they shove a bottle of, I don't even know, it was either ginger ale or soda in my face. And you know, those guys did everything to keep me alive out there. They were exactly what I needed. You know, I wouldn't really drink because I was just so done. And then finally, I either jogged part of it or walked a whole lap, and then came in and just and just hugged my friends. And I knew if I kept going, I would potentially seriously injure myself, and it wouldn't be worth walking the last 40 miles just to say I finished the 100. I do have a lot of respect and integrity for the races, but if there's a difference between me just not having my day and just jogging it in 7-8 minute pace versus me actually seriously injuring myself. And unfortunately in that moment, I had to pull the plug. I had to DNF. It was the absolute worst feeling. When I was having my breakdown, the really bad part, the final 2-3 miles, the other runners in the 48 and 24 hour race were just being so encouraging to me. Every time one of them came by, they'd say anything to help me keep going. Jacob and Nick and Jake Jackson literally like tried to pull me, I think at one point, something like that. They would just, everyone there was just doing everything they could to help me keep going, but it wasn't going to happen on June 19th. Unfortunately.
I mean, that's the nature of ultras, right? So mm-hmm. I think that's amazing that you were able to pick up this experience, because I think it's only going to make, it's going to really set you up to take down the record, because it's no question in a lot of people's minds, mine included, and of course in yours, that you will take it below 11 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Before we move on, I do want to back up and talk a little bit about the food, because you brought up a point that Matt and I, when we were commentating in the studio, we noticed the combination of ginger ale and Reese's Pieces, and we felt sick to our stomach thinking about what that flavor profile would be. So that was an unplanned, like, that you had never had that combo before?
No, that was something that Steve Durbin, the race director, and the doctor thought would be sufficient for me. You know, at that point, literally, I mean, it's kind of do or die. So if those guys have a secret, right. You know, my crew, you know, I don't have anything against trying something like that when I'm just caving. And So it was actually when they gave me ginger ale for the first time on the back straightaway in a plastic cup, and they did this like is it called acupuncture, where they like hold your hand up and they squeeze very hard. The acupressure. They did that and gave me a ginger ale pill, and I was able to pick it back up for 2 miles. It was crazy that it hit me like that, and I was able to get my crap back together and keep going. But yeah, I didn't really think about the taste, to be honest. And those moments, you're just trying to do like whatever to get back on. So yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've seen crazier things consumed in an ultra event. I was just, that combination was a new one. So I had to mm-hmm. know if that was a pre-planned, tested, in training kind of situation, or if it was a last ditch effort. I remember when I ran my first 50 miler, I had to, at mile 45, I needed to put a handful of Oreos in my mouth, and it was the secret that I needed to get me the last 5 miles. So it sounds like the ginger ale Reese's was something more akin to a situation mm-hmm. like that. So,
mm-hmm.
So I've got to ask now, what is next now going forward? You did mention when we talked to you a few hours after you dropped, you did talk about changing up the training so it's less volume on the legs, and you're going to focus on your first Ironman. Is that still the next? Is that like the new A goal right now?
I still have to decide. You know, still even after 4 days, my mind is just racing with thoughts. So I signed up for the Ironman way before this was back, probably like 4 or 5 weeks ago. Assuming I would have been satisfied with my result on June 19th, I am technically signed up for an Ironman distance triathlon on August 22nd.
Which race is that?
It's called Michigan Titanium. It's not technically an Ironman brand, but it's a 146-mile triathlon. So that is what I'm registered for, but, long-term, you know, down the road, I plan on coming to Desert Solstice in December.
So long, like this December, the goal is Desert Solstice.
Yes.
And will that stage be for a 100 mile record, or is that going to be a sub 11?
That stage, I need to step away from 100 mile efforts. You know, I've based my training the whole past few years off of the 100 mile. That stage is going to be set for the biggest record. I'm going to go for the 24 hour world record. I'm going to go for, I think Koros ran 186.6 miles of 24 hours. You know, originally that was kind of the plan all along. I had a lot more than a lot of my confidence killed on Saturday, but, I just have to remind myself of the runner I am. And I think I'm very capable of sub 11, just like I think I'm very capable of going 100 and whatever 87 miles on December 11th. So
there you have it.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of think it's more of a bold move than the whole sub 11 thing, considering I couldn't get the job done there, but, I'm not going to let one bad race define. I'm not going to let one bad race define me moving forward. I've trained too hard. It's not like the 8,000 miles in preparation for June 19th is now just down the toilet. You know, it's still inside my legs. The fire is on, like I could go out tomorrow and just probably crush 50 if I wanted to. I won't, because I need some time to recover, but, I'm extremely hungry, and I want it more now than I ever thought I could have ever imagined before the sub 11 attempt.
Wow.
That's and, awesome. Me, even if I DNF or fail at, Koros's record, you know, it's the toughest ultramarathon record. And, I want to show people, you know, that I can be out there for 24 hours. I'd like to get a slot for the USA 24 hour team, and I can't think of a better place to do it rather than at Desert Solstice, where there's a lot of elite, a lot of fast pros, and it's a pretty empty track, I've heard. So sounds like the place to try it.
Yeah, there's only a couple dozen or so runners out there, and obviously you don't have three narrow lanes indoor. Yeah. There's a lot of advantages and disadvantages. It's different. Obviously it's outdoor. A lot of it depends on what kind of December day we get here in Phoenix. That's exciting. I mean, that race is already exciting with the records that people attempt to break. Obviously, it was the stage for Camille. And so, yeah, I mean, that's going to be exciting to watch. Going after a record that Yanis Koros himself believes will stand for centuries. Mm-hmm. Not a direct quote, but from what I hear. Mm-hmm. So I know that is going to be an event to watch.
Yeah. Just like I said before, the sub 11, I'm going to go out and either do it or just frankly die trying. I definitely have to do some research over fueling for 24 hours versus 100 miles. I don't think my training really changes much other than I will actually be running slower on Saturdays than what I have now as for my long run. It's pretty much the exact same training. It's just like when you go from the half marathon to the marathon, you know, the best way to train for a half marathon is a marathon. The best way to train for a marathon is a half marathon. So it's like, the 100 mile is pretty much the stepping stone for 24 hours. I know last Saturday, I know the saying, you know, you're only as good as your last result, which I do believe to a point, but, I think if I was on an open track last Saturday or even in the coming weeks, I could do it. I'm not going to, because I need to move on. If every time when I was like 18 to 21 or 22 years old, if I failed then and I didn't keep going, I wouldn't be where I was today. You know, I didn't ever DNF, but, I had terrible races and it was just not a fun time to be a running Tagger Vinette. And then, but, if I would have stopped when I was beaten down, then I wouldn't be who I am today. And I'm confident, that the DNF on June 19th is gonna, is going to be like the stepping stone to what's for what's to come on December 11th of this year.
So that's the new date on the calendar. I love it. And I'm sorry, I got to ask though, maybe this is too far. Maybe this question is, the answer is too far down the line, but back to a sub 11 attempt. If, and not if, when you go after that again, would 6 days at the Dome, so will the Pettit Center be your stage of choice to attempt that record, or would you potentially eye a different race to break that record?
I would go back to 6 days if there were five people on the track. You know, when Killian went for his, this is totally different, when Killian went for his 24-hour thing in March or whatever, he had five people, which is like the IAU standard or something like that. You got to have so many starters. But if I can't have that few of people there, then yes, I will probably be searching for another venue in probably early summer of 2022, about this time next year, late spring, early summer, I'll be looking to do it again. So if anyone has a race where, you know, they are fast and it's either a 1 mile loop, a half mile loop, or a quarter mile track that has very minimal traffic, I will be looking forward to it then. So I will be coming back and I will be getting my sub 11.
Love it. I mean, potentially use a trail race such as Black Canyon for a tune-up. Could that be in the cards?
Well, if I run 100 and however many miles, 186 or 187 miles on December 11th, I don't know if I will be able to come to Black Canyon in A-race shape, but I will but I will decide. So I think if I'm able to even come anywhere close of his record, it's going to wipe me for a while. Because just like he said, he thought it would stand for centuries, and I don't think it's going to stand any more than 24 years. So,
wow, love it.
Thank you.
I love it. So, yeah, I guess that's pretty much it. I mean, you really laid it out there, and I want to thank you for your time of rehashing everything that went down leading up to the record attempt and to Saturday. And thank you so much for letting us follow along. It was honestly a pleasure. 10:59 or bust. This time, obviously, it was a bust, but you went for it, and that's exactly what you said you were going to do. So I think the people got exactly what they were going to see, somebody laying everything on the line. Because as you said in our pre-race interview, that is exactly what it takes to even have a chance to break records that are as stout as the ones that you're going to break. So love the mentality, and it's super inspiring to see.
For sure. Thank you. And thank you, Matt and Jamil, for covering. I've been dragging myself through the dumps. I really wish I could have finished what I started on that day. It just wasn't in the cards for me. But next time when I go after the sub 11, it's going to happen. I'll tell you that. So I will, just like I said, thank you guys for covering the event and doing everything. And it will happen someday.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this is probably easier for me to say than you, but I think a lot of people would agree that what happened on Saturday is a key building block and a key part of the journey to sub 11. I can only imagine the knowledge that you gained from that effort and that DNF will serve you in everything you try to do for the rest of your life on and off the track.
Yeah, for sure. Just like I said, it was totally different than each of the two ultras. If you count the treadmill as an ultra, you know, like I said, a Tunnel Hill, it wasn't a crowded course. There were probably 50 people on there total on a huge spread. And this was the first time I ever hopped on a track for a track ultra. So I was able to learn so much and gain a lot of information that I will put and pull back from my brain in December when I try to go for 24 hours.
Amazing. Well, we can't wait to see it all happen. Desert Solstice on the Central High School track right here in Phoenix, Arizona. So Tagger Van Etten, thank you so much for your time. We'll stay in touch and keep following up with you, and we'll chat with you in the lead up to Desert Solstice.
Sounds great. Yeah. Sounds like a plan.
Enjoy the rest of your recovery, man.
Thank you.
All right, that does it for our conversation with TVE, Taggart Van Etten. Go ahead and give him a follow on Instagram at Taggart_Van Etten and on Twitter and Strava at Taggart Van Etten. And while you're there, be sure to check out our channels at Steep Life Media. We've got a live stream coming up on our YouTube channel in just 2 weeks, July 11th. Live from Silverton, Colorado, we will be bringing you the Kendall Mountain Run. It is, of course, an AeroViper running race. So stay tuned for details on that. It's going to be a great mountain event. So make sure you're subscribed to the Steep Life Media YouTube channel. And until then, we'll see you on the next episode.